Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. We've had lots of promises and bold statements by G8 and G20 leaders talking up reform of the global tax system. But watch out for some backpedalling as the finance lobby kicks in and governments begin to realise their words imply real reform, not half measures. The proof of the pudding will be in their big meetings coming up this summer. And here's a quick roundup for the rest of the news this month. France looks set to pass legislation on greater reporting transparency for their banks. The EU's moving towards forcing European banks to reveal the taxes they pay and their profits on a country-by-country basis. The UK Parliament's Public Accounts Committee is calling on accountancy firms who help companies avoid taxes to be named and shamed. The Spanish Prime Minister's published his tax returns after his government was implicated in a corruption scandal involving payments from a Swiss bank account. Italians elect a new government this month. Convicted tax fraudster Silvio Berlusconi is trying to bribe voters with tax cuts and an amnesty for tax evaders. In Canada, members of Parliament on the House of Commons Finance Committee held hearings throughout this month on how to tackle the use of tax havens. And in the United States, a new Corporate Tax Fairness Act aims to stop corporations using tax havens to avoid paying taxes. If it's passed by Congress, it could mean $600 billion in tax revenue over 10 years for the United States and a big windfall for developing countries. Senator Bernie Sanders is introducing the bill.
The point has to be made that if we're going to be serious about deficit reductions, corporate America, which is now enjoying record-breaking profits, is going to have to step up to the plate. And we are not going to balance the budget on the backs of the elderly, the children, the sick, or the poor.
That's the roundup for this month. You can find much more news and analysis where that came from on the Tax Justice Network's blog on www.taxjustice.blogspot.com. Now we're going to talk to tax justice economist Richard Murphy for his take on this month. Okay, Richard, this month, quite an interesting vote in France. It's the first steps towards country-by-country reporting for banks. They're going to be obliged to be transparent about their presence in tax havens.
What France has tried to do is force banks to disclose which tax havens they operate in, and that's obviously the first step towards country-by-country reporting, and very welcome. They're also going to demand information on the turnover, that's the sales income, of banks by country. Again, an important step towards country-by-country reporting. And I think very curiously, but very welcome, how many people there are in each of the countries in which a bank operates, because that's some indication of whether there's real economic activity being undertaken there or not. And of course, we know that in tax havens, there tend not to be many people. Unfortunately, and I think everybody in France who's involved in this campaign will agree with me when I say it's unfortunate, they failed to get through a demand that banks will disclose their profits by country and their tax paid by country. Now, that's a shame, because obviously, if we'd had all that information, including the profits and tax paid, we would have known a great deal about what banks in France were doing. Now, curiously, I can tell you that the discussions in the European Parliament are heading, if you like, the other way. It's there proving to be very hard to get information through on turnover and people, but there appears to be some agreement that disclosure of use of tax havens and profit and tax paid by country may happen. So we are making progress. The mood for change has been created. The idea of country-by-country reporting is clearly on the agenda, and it won't leave it now. And all of these are welcome steps towards the eventual need for an international accounting standard that demands this information from all multinational companies, which is the ultimate goal.
No doubt the banks will try to water that down, but I think that it should go through with a majority in the last stages of voting. There's also been a very interesting new report on new ways to tax the digital economy, which was commissioned by the French government, which may make companies like Google and Facebook sit up and take notice. France is looking at ways of taxing companies which have been notoriously difficult to tax.
The idea inside the French report is to locate basically the profits of these internet companies in the places where the data that the user creates is generated. Now, that simplifies the proposal quite a bit. But what it fundamentally is trying to do is overcome this essential problem of how do we link profit to place, which is at the core of the current debate about taxing multinational companies. It's an innovative solution. It's good news that the questions are being asked and solutions are being explored. So whilst I don't know this is the answer, I do think it's welcome and I look forward to other proposals as well.
Okay, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, has brought out quite an interesting discussion paper ahead of the G20 meeting in the summer with the heads of member states. Now, the Tax Justice Network and other campaigners have had a long battle with this exclusive rich country club. Now, the OECD seems to be making a few concessions and indicating it might be willing to talk about some of the solutions the Tax Justice Network it's been advocating for the last 10 years. So what does that mean for tax justice?
I think across the tax justice movement, there are different responses to this report. The report is disappointing with regard to its attention to developing country needs. Those who focus heavily upon developing countries will look at this and just say this is a typical OECD report that virtually ignores the developing country issue. And I agree with them. It does. However, and this is a big however, the other viewpoint is that this actually does represent significant progress, because this does indicate that actually in its own way, the OECD is saying that almost everything is on the agenda now. They aren't jumping up and down and saying unitary taxation, which is what we want, is going to happen, and I don't think it will. But they are saying that the systems that they have been promoting, information exchange on demand rather than automatic information exchange, and transfer pricing rules rather than rules for unitary apportionment, are not working. When we get an organisation like the OECD to admit that its own proposals, those things that it has been basically demanding countries comply with for 50 years in some cases, are now not meeting the international need, you have to say that's the first step towards change. Now, I'm not going to run up a flag and say we've won anything, because we haven't. But I am going to say that that's an incredibly welcome step compared to, for example, what happened in 2009 when the G20 asked the OECD to come up with a solution, and what it delivered was so tame that, frankly, nothing happened. This report, coupled with the G8 in June, could lead to real change. I stress the word could, because it may not. But it is saying that arm's length pricing needs review. It is saying the rules on company residence and what is called permanent establishment, which has been abused, for example, by Google and Amazon, in particular in recent cases that have been heavily highlighted, are in need of urgent review. They're saying that the 3,000 plus agreements around the world, which are double tax agreements, which all are based upon OECD model documents, may all need updating in a very short period of time. They're talking 2 years. They're saying, you know, the standard approach, which is 10 years, is a reasonable horizon, is not acceptable here. They want to find ways to get through change quickly where it is needed. If I expected, you know, a 1 out of 10, this was a 7 out of 10. That's how much further this document went than I expected. So I am cautiously optimistic. All good news, but a lot of work to do.
Okay, tell us about your new book, Over Here and Under Taxed. That's out this week, I think.
I do indeed have a new ebook out. It's called Over Here and Under Taxed. It does look at the issues such as permanent establishment, which are the real core of the problem in the case of Google and Amazon, but not, I have to say, in the case of Starbucks. So I do differentiate the cases. And then I spend a lot of time looking at what the solutions are. One of the solutions I propose in the book is entirely novel and new. I don't think we've tried it before. I don't think anyone suggested it before, which is a minimum tax rate for companies. Posing questions isn't what I'm terribly interested in. Finding answers to questions is what I want to do. And that's the focus of the book. It's there to provide answers to questions. I hope people will read it.
Will we have to download it from Amazon?
If you look online, you will not have to buy it only from Amazon. It is available from Apple, which is probably no better. It's available from Random House, who can supply it for any format but Kindle. And it's only if you can only read on Kindle that you have to buy it from Amazon.
Thanks, Richard. Tax Justice economist Richard Murphy. As you heard earlier from Richard, this month the OECD, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, has admitted the global tax system needs reform. But who wrote those rules in the first place? They did. This month the TaxCast investigates. Is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's the OECD.
Is it a think tank? Is it an intergovernmental organisation? What is the OECD? This is a very serious question.
John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network.
The OECD has a massive budget. It has no formal political authority. It's a member organisation, and the rules of which countries become members are opaque, to put it mildly. Its critics describe the OECD as a forum for neoliberal thinking. It's not clear what it really is, but it has usurped an awful lot of powers at the international level to lay down the rules and guidelines around taxation, taxing of multinational companies and international tax cooperation. So I think of the OECD as the great usurper.
Tax law professor Alison Christians.
It's a lobbyist group. It's a place for business and government to talk without being seen, for business to influence lawmakers, policymakers, behind closed doors, outside of regular lobbying channels. If you're an NGO, you're not a business and industry person. You're not a head of a major multinational company. You're not invited. You're not told where the meetings are going to be, and if you showed up, they wouldn't let you in. If no one from outside is allowed to observe, then how can we be confident that what's going on is not just a grand collusion? There's no way to be confident.
Alvin Mosioma of the Tax Justice Network in Africa.
Unfortunately, we have in the world today a situation where, we use football as an example, one team decides who the referee is and who even your goalkeeper should be, and then they meet on the pitch and expect to play the same game. So I think that we need to really question how OECD have been put in a position where they determine the rules of the game.
Let's talk money. Now, the OECD's operating revenue and expenses are tax-exempt. That includes staff salaries. Quite ironic for people who've ended up setting the international tax rules. So where does the OECD's funding come from? And how transparent is the OECD about its finances? John Christensen.
At one level, you can see, download their accounts, you can look at their funding arrangements, but they don't just get money from their member states. In many OECD events around the Tax and Development Task Force have been co-sponsored by private sector organisations. So they have other funding sources in addition to their membership subs. And bearing in mind that they operate out of one of the most expensive quarters of Paris, it's not a cheap operation they're running. Their funding comes from their member states, and their member states include some of the most powerful and politically active tax havens in the world. Think Switzerland, Austria, Luxembourg, United States, United Kingdom, and so on. These are powerful countries, and they will protect their interests. And that might include threats to withdraw funding.
What about the quality and independence of their analyses and recommendations? Professor Christians again.
You know, if you have 10 people in the room and they all represent the same clients, they ask certain questions the same way, they frame the problems and they frame the solutions in the same way. So there's a lack of diversity in the room. People with different perspectives simply aren't there to offer their research. All you have to do is pick a person and just watch where did they come from and where did they go, and you'll see a very strong line between private industry, private business, chamber of commerce type business, to government positions where you're representing your government in the OECD. So I say it's the best tax system money can buy, because you write the rules when you're in the government position that then help your clients when you're back in the private sector, whether as a lobbyist or as a tax manager. I'm very critical of this model of norm making, trying to pretend that what you're doing is a global standard setting. It's not a global standard just because you keep saying it is.
And that's another problem. If the OECD only represents the interests of 34 countries, that leaves out about 170 others. They've been adding new member states rather slowly. So where do non-OECD member countries go to try and have a voice in international taxation? Alvin Mossioma.
The UN should be the valid platform where international regulations on taxation globally should be made. But the UN Tax Committee has been weakened and has continued to be weakened, while the OECD, which is a club of rich nations, is the one that is dominating tax policy globally. The rulemakers are the major beneficiaries.
John Christensen.
If you look at every attempt to date to elevate the powers of the United Nations Tax Committee, it has been OECD countries which have blocked attempts to elevate the status of the United Nations Tax Committee. And they're doing that precisely, I think, because they do not want to pass those powers across to a genuinely global, multilateral, intergovernmental body, because they know that at that stage they will lose significant powers on taxation rights.
So if the OECD doesn't really have the power to tell the world's countries how they should behave in tax matters, why don't more countries stick two fingers up at them and say, well, actually, we don't agree with that. We're going to go our own way. Alvin Mossioma again.
Definitely there's strength in unity, and I think that individual countries, some of them are too weak to be able to make individual decisions. Many of them are at masses of this, many of these multinational companies that have revenues that are 3-4 times the budgets of this country. So I think that in the long term, African government can be able to take their own steps and say, okay, if globally we are not able to accept or to reach a consensus on how to change the financial systems, then Africa will take a step and do it by itself. And I don't see anything that's stopping them. Why not Africa as a continent?
And we've already seen larger non-OECD member countries like Brazil, India and China flexing their muscles. Professor Alison Christians.
You look at Brazil. Why is Brazil not a member of the OECD? Well, one argument is that the OECD actually has courted Brazil, has said to them, why don't you come and be a member? And Brazil's reaction was, but you're telling me I can only be a member if I sign on to everything you've already done, and I agree not to disagree with you on anything. So the better way to get agreement is just find the people that are going to agree and let them agree, and then sell that as global tax policy.
The question is, how long can that go on? No one can continue to ignore that international tax rules just aren't fit for the 21st century, not even for the recession-hit richer nations who set them up in the first place. John Christensen.
We're entering an era of tax wars, and I think the OECD is being challenged not only by other countries but also by civil society, which says you are not legitimate, you are not acting in the interests of other countries. I mean, I think the OECD recognises that if they don't engage more broadly, they're not more transparent and more accountable, there's a genuine risk that China, India, Brazil and other countries will say, look, these rules don't work for us, so we're going to adopt our own rules. And that could lead to the worst of all situations, which is a fragmentation of rules, different rules in every single country, which is going to make it much more difficult to create a coherent framework for international trade and international investment. So the OECD needs to, very urgently, I think, to massively improve its game.
You've been listening to The Taxcast. We'll have more news and analysis next month.